Have you ever listened to the pod and thought it would be awesome if Jen stopped being nerdy about movies for 60 seconds and talked about your business instead? Well, my friends, you're in luck. Watch with Jen is looking for sponsors. Do you own or run a theater, bookstore, film fest, website, school, physical media firm, pod, streaming channel, or small business that might like to advertise on Watch with Jen? Whether you're interested in sponsoring one episode or several, please reach out. You can get a hold of me at contact@filmintuition.com. Thanks so much. Hey, this is Jen Johans at filmintuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen. This week, I'm honored to be joined by not one, but two brilliant screenwriters, Larry Karaszewski and Daniel Waters. Larry Karaszewski and his writing, directing, producing partner, Scott Alexander, are best known for writing unusual true stories, such as the films Ed Wood, The People vs. Larry Flint, Man on the Moon, Autofocus, Big Eyes, Dolomite Is My Name, and the hit television miniseries, The People vs. O.J. Simpson, American Crime Story. The team has won Emmys, Golden Globes, Producers and Writers Guild Awards. Additionally, Larry is also a former governor and vice president of the Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts and Sciences. Born in Ohio and raised in Indiana, Daniel Waters is the Edgar Award-winning screenwriter of the 1988 cult classic Heathers, starring Winona Ryder and Christian Slater. Additionally, the man who wrote or co-wrote the films Batman Returns, Hudson Hawk, The Adventures of Ford Fairlane, Demolition Man, and more. He's also the writer-director of Happy Campers and Sex and Death 101. Guys, thank you so much for being here. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having us. I love the fact that you have us both on at the same time. There's a limited number of, actually, there's an unlimited number of film nerd podcasts, but the ones that are good are a handful, and we've each done them many times kind of on our own, but I think you're the person that we sort of like, as we're a team. This threesome seems to work really well, I think, you know.
It does. I remember I invited you because I only knew Dan just a little bit on social and I didn't want to, you know, bother him. And I said, Larry, do you want to come on? You're like, can I bring Dan? Yes, of course.
can I have a plus one in the podcast?
Yes, always. Yeah.
Now we need a little work on choosing subjects, but I came around on Jan McElvinson. I came around.
Right. You know, you should tell everybody like how this all came to be. Dan right. had a weird dream that I ruined the vibe at your party. Dan, what happened there?
Oh, geez. You know, I had another dream about this podcast where I woke up too late and missed it. And then we did it again and Richard Gere showed up and Richard Gere plays a part later on in this podcast. But you were a coke. Not to cast aspersions, I'm sure this isn't true in real life, but it was a great party. You had a new version of cocaine that you decided to just stop the party and make everyone try. And it was really, it could have gone fun way, but it went an awkward way. And it was like, sometimes my dreams take the least dramatic route. They go turn into an Altman movie and like, wait a minute. The cocaine at a party, this should be fun, but you know,
you probably saw that I was watching like Shampoo and you just put me in one of those, you know, things is what I'm thinking. But I love that. You know, usually I get scared when guys are like, I had a dream about you, but Dan's are always interesting. Yeah.
You should be scared.
No, Dan was famous when we were growing up. Dan was famous for his insanely complicated dreams because he was, I think you remember your dreams more if you write them down.
Yeah.
And maybe I'm saying something that's wrong, Dan, but I almost feel like you almost began as a writer by like writing down your dreams. So you'd have like five sheets of like swashbuckling adventures with Dan Watt. And they were just so surreal and strange and funny. And, you know, we would actually pass around Dan's dreams.
I have a good, I can remember my dreams very well, but I stopped writing them down because it started to affect my dreams. Where there was one dream where like my dead father came back and he said, why don't you write this down in your dream dictionary, dude? And he starts dancing to me, all ready for this. And like, it kind of was, my subconscious started to parody my writing of dreams. So now I don't write them down.
Yeah. Now we just email them and they inspire podcasts. That's why we're here. Yeah. That's we were thinking of paranoia and somehow we got on.
Right. Because we wanted to come back. I think you asked us because you're coming to
Boston. Great Michael Ritchie. Michael Ritchie, a great subject, a feckin' subject that not too many people know about, but
yeah,
great work.
Yeah, but I talked to Dan when I was like, what should we do for Jen? And Dan was like, well, I know you're weak on Tarkovsky, Larry. Maybe we should watch a bunch of, you know, I was like, that seemed really heavy lifting, you know.
Really heavy.
And,
yeah.
And then you were like, how about 70s paranoid thrillers like The Parallax View? And I was like, oh, that's kind of good. And
Twilight then, Fast Gleaming, a little odd.
Twilight Fast Gleaming. I think that's what scared me. I've tried to watch Twilight like five times and I always fall asleep. So that scared me. It's a fine subject matter. Maybe we'll bring it back. And then I don't remember. We threw out a couple actors, and one of them was Jan Michael Vincent, and which was probably like the lowest person on the list that we probably could have picked. And then Jen reacted instantly, like, "Yes, Jan Michael Vincent." And yeah. I was like, "Oh yeah, we're in." I was very happy, but Dan was like, "Really? All those great topics, and we wound up on Jan Michael Vincent?
How do we end up with Jan Michael Vincent?" And it's like
Larry suggested, because Larry's
a Buster and Billy guy, And not to blow my denouement, but Buster and Billy is the movie that brings me into the Jan Michael Vincent corner. I think it's the one closet masterpiece people should get out of this podcast.
Yes. No, Buster and Billy, because it was for many years so difficult to see, it became one of those movies I really championed. I would always tell people, have you seen this movie called Buster and Billy? And it's like, no, they haven't. And I actually wound up buying like 16. In fact, that yellow thing back there is a print of Buster and Billy. I'd buy like 16 millimeter prints of Buster and Billy. So I actually have the TV version of Buster Billy. I have the theatrical version of Buster Billy. And actually when the New Bev showed it, like a couple months ago, the New Beverly Cinema in Los Angeles, they got a print that was kind of beat up, and I got this like last minute phone call the day of, like, Larry, and we think you have Buster and Billy prints. Can you bring one over? And so I saved the day by bringing over my Buster and Billy print. So it's a movie I tend to champion a lot of like orphan films. I'm big on a movie called Last Summer because that's not I try to get people to see. So Buster and Billy has been one of those that I've carried on my shoulders for quite a long time, and so that's why I think I emotionally I'm prepared for this Jan Michael Vincent tribute that we're doing.
Yes, and I had to go more of a journey because I realized I used to hate Jan Michael Vincent, not just for killing Charles Bronson, but because there's some actors that if girls are attracted to, like, I go, if you're attracted to blank, you're never going to be attracted to me. Like, I liked Woody Allen and George Segal. Like, those guys are like verbal guys. Like, oh, if you like George Segal, you could like me. But Jan Michael Vincent, and it's so funny. He reminds me, like, we went to a lake, cottage in the lake of my cousins in lower Michigan, like usually every other weekend. And these guys would walk in with their shirts off, and there's a lot of shirts off in Jan Michael Vincent's oeuvre. And they walk into this place, the Driftwood, and I felt so self-conscious and like, who are these fuckers? And Jan Michael Vincent always reminded me of those guys. And it's amazing if you look at all the movies, the way all the actresses, the way Kay Lenz looks at him, the way Glynis O'Connor looks at him, the way Lee Purcell looks at him, the way Bonnie Bedelia looks at him, they just have this instant infatuation that usually comes of a man looking at a woman, but he brings it out. Even Darren McGavin in Tribes and Charles Bronson Mechanic have a certain, they give them their gaze, give him his gaze. And he doesn't have to work for it. I'm always against guys who don't have to work for it. They have natural, they love. But like I said, I had the, went on the journey, learned to love him. There's no actor like him. He can do immoral and moral without effect, without catching him acting. And it's, you know, I'm talking too much. Let's go.
Yeah, no, I think you're saying a lot of great things. I'd seen, I think, almost everything that Jen always suggests, let's just watch four or five. And I think I wound up watching the entire, everything from 1968 to, you know, 1984 or something like this. So we do have a lot to talk about. I think one of the things where I was always resistant sometimes as a youth to Jan Michael Vincent, one, because he was so pretty, but also because he was like, he always plays like the young guy who's, you know, and not even necessarily in youth films, but it's more like the way they classically pair like a young guy with an old guy, and he's like the next generation.
Yeah.
And maybe because I didn't identify him like Dan, you know, I was always like, that's not the new generation. Why is he representing? You know, there weren't that many teen kind of stars back then, I was always resentful that he was our representative on screen.
Yeah, I can see that. I'd only seen a couple movies with him. I saw The Mechanic, I saw Big Wednesday, but that was really it. So I was just kind of excited to go on the journey because I know a lot of people who love him. And one of the things I love about movies that you guys choose is they're always interesting. They always, you know, they're ones you have to dig and find, and they have really great dialogue. Like I wrote something down, George Armitage, Vigilante Force, writer director. You have a little lady, like a Golden Girl situation, and she actually shouts at a villain, "If my third ex was here, you'd be salad tossed with double aught buckshot." And I thought, that's a Larry and Dan kind of movie, and I love that. Yes.
Well, that's a strange movie in the Jan Michael Vincent.
Yes.
because he's actually paired the old guy in that. Actually takes his shirt off more than he does. I mean, the same that Chris Christopherson never met a shirt he liked. I mean, he is like so just, both these guys are so topless in every movie they're in.
Yes, and then for the climax, Jan Michael Vincent gets the battle-tested uniform of just suspenders and no shirt.
Yes. Yes.
All right, we're going to war. I'm going to wear these suspenders and nothing else.
Yep. Is my hair good? Yeah. Yes.
I mean, just to get us going, I'm going to start off. I mean, I don't remember if this ended up being on our list, but I think at least two of us watch it, maybe three of us watch it. It was the thing that actually put him on the map for me when I was a kid. You know, it was the early era of ABC Movies of the Week. They kind of invented it. And one of the ones that really made an impact was a film called Tribes in 1970. Which in my memory, which I saw a lot as a kid, because it was like one of those big prestige event kind of television things, was that, oh, it's Jan Michael Vincent and Darren McGavin in kind of a Marine boot camp, you know, officer and a gentleman, you know, Full Metal Jacket kind of thing. And it kind of is. I mean, it is that. And Jan Michael Vincent plays like the young hippie yoga guy who somehow gets drafted. And Darren McGavin is the tough drill sergeant. And it's just, the first half hour is that movie you expect. The drill sergeant, you know, beating the crap, do those push-ups, you hippie fucker, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And, but like, what then this rewatch, because I haven't watched it in decades, I was like, oh my God, I forgot the gimmick of this movie. The gimmick of the movie is the drill sergeant doesn't make a man out of Jan Michael Vincent. Jan Michael Vincent's sensitivity and his just beautiful spirit makes Darren McGavin realize that the next generation is different than his generation. It's the drill sergeant who learns from the hippie rather than the hippie who gets the hippie beat out of him by the tough. It isn't about sending Jan Michael Vincent off to war. I'm going to say to everyone,
it's not the end of hair, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, no. It's not the end of, yeah, but it's also, this is a full spoilers program. We're going to talk about the end.
Oh,
of
yeah.
The movie. So Dan already gave away that Charles Bronson dies. So all bets are off. The fact
that this movie ends, my life.
Yeah. One of the great thing about this movie is it ends with Jan Michael Vincent running away. Jan Michael Vincent goes over the hill. He goes AWOL. And Darren McGavin understands. You know, there's an Earl Holloman character who is like the tough ass Marine guy.
Second build.
Yeah, but Jan Michael Vincent is so beautiful in this movie, and just such a, you know, such a calming presence. I mean, he has different phases of his career. So if you only know Jan Michael Vincent as the guy with the shotgun from White Line Fever, or the truck driver, or the hillbilly, whatever, he plays that quite a bit. This is a different, more interesting Jan Michael Vincent, I think. Either you watch it?
Yeah, I caught it. I didn't have a history with it the way you did. But I was fascinated by it right away. And I mean, even Darren McGavin's, one of his first lines, barking Lee Ermey style to Jan Michael Vincent, is, "I will not get your face out of my mind." And like when I wrote down that line, I'm like, it's kind of romantic, you know, it's kind of
.
And it's the way Jan Michael Vincent wear some doubt. It's so funny. Like Jeremy Gavin doodles. He's like, hey, that's a really nice drawing. It's got beautiful lines. Like, what's happening? Like, you know, it's like a snake charmer.
Yeah.
And it starts the, like, you never, the great thing about J. Michael Vincent is you never doubt anything he says. It's like it's not like he's acting like something. He's thinking something he's not giving you. And he's got this Zen personality and tribes that he also has in Mechanic. And I love that I've said this before. I love that he goes from moral to immoral, like with a blink of an eye. It's kind of great.
And even all the other cadets in the bunker area, you expect them to do, beat the shit out of Jean-Michel Vincent. Because he's making them do extra laps and all that kind of crap. Mm-hmm. But there's a beautiful moment where Darren McGavin like just quiet in the bunk area, and Darren McGavin goes and looks, and basically Jan Michael Vincent's got them all doing yoga. He's got them like he's standing on his head and all this, and they're just basically all zenned out because they realize that Jan Michael Vincent can withstand the torture that Darren McGavin is doing on them because he goes to a Zen place. It's actually a beautiful, beautiful film.
And he's actually making them better soldiers, which
correct.
I mean, the studio executive in me would have had a big contest between Darren McGavin's squad and Earl Hallman's squad, where they use their new Zen knowledge to beat the bad guys and win the big contest and win the big capture the flag game. But they weren't listening to me.
Yeah,
they didn't
Yeah, I'm sorry. That's exactly how the movie in the studio version would totally work. But because what makes it the movie from, I believe it is 1970, is he rejects the army and he becomes. I mean, and so it's like, so wow, that's not. It's got that 70s ending. You know, it's not a movie that's going to try to compromise and say that, oh yeah, he's just going to like he's what you just saw. He's just made them better soldiers, so it's going to be a Zen way of killing people as opposed to can't accept the army, and he doesn't care, and you almost don't even you kind of almost think he's going to get away because he's just going to disappear into the woods and they'll never find him.
And after watching so many Jan Michael Vincent movies, the opening credits of having watched his hair get shaved off, Full Metal Jacket style. It's like quite traumatic. It's quite
well, that's what I remember the most as a kid was that you actually saw Jan Michael Vincent get his head shaved. And I think that might have been like part of the promo or something. I just remember all the people at school would just be like, oh my God, they cut that guy's hair off. You know, they'd never seen that in a movie before.
Gotcha. We should announce that it is available on YouTube. I didn't get a chance to rewatch it, but I have it in my list and I need to watch it now for sure.
Yes, go to YouTube and click around a little bit. Watch the first 30 seconds of several of the full downloads of it. There's a couple that are like really kind of shoddy looking, and there's actually one that's kind of beautiful. But you want it the old TV ratio too, if you can.
Yeah.
The other movie from the early days that I think I might have been alone in watching, and I did this more because I had an emotional connection to it, is Going Home from 71. And then both these things are sort of before he becomes a star. Going Home is a Robert Mitchum movie that MGM made, and I actually went to see it with my father. Strange enough, I think I have it right here, on a double bill with Brewster McCloud. I saw Brewster McCloud and Going Home the same night, which is kind of crazy.
Wow.
And Going Home was a bit of a flop. And it was one of those movies during the 71 period of MGM where the studio executive was recutting almost every film. And this was like, a first time director directing, although he had a history in Hollywood. But they apparently cut the hell out of it. And you'll find stuff like voiceovers and different things. I don't know what the original version was, but it's still quite a powerful film. It's worth checking out. There's another one that's pretty obscure. It's basically Robert Mitchum. Jan Michael Vincent is Robert Mitchum's son, and Robert Mitchum murdered the mother. He murdered the mother in front of the little kid.
Whoa!
And the little kid testimony at the trial is what put Robert Mitchum away. And he was only like 7 or 8 years old. And now Mitchum is coming out of jail and Jan Michael
going home.
Yeah, he's going home, and Jan Michael Vincent shows up back in his life, full of resentment, but also sort of wants to get to know his father. And it all takes place in like trailer parks, and it's all Brenda Vaccaro is Mitchum's girlfriend, and you know, it's one of those things where it's a 70s movie and the thing where you think they're going to come together and they kind of don't. But it's sort of what I was referring to earlier. I mean, the Tribes had him and Darren McGavin. This is Jan Michael Vincent and Robert Mitchum. And Jan Michael Vincent can stand up to Robert Mitchum. Right? It was one of my favorites of all time. So much so that the only good thing that happened for Going Home is that Jan Michael Vincent got a Best Supporting Actor nomination from the Golden Globes.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yeah, which is one of those things where, like no one, even I forgot that. So it's an interesting performance. It's an interesting film. I'm not going to go so far to say it's good, but if you watch, you know, there's a first 5 minutes of it's a combination of, if this is not, it doesn't even concern Jan Michael Vincent, but it's Jan Michael Vincent's character as a little boy, like holding his stuffy on the stairs, listening to his dad murder the mother.
Wow.
And as that is happening, you hear the kid talking to like a prosecutor, like, you know, like, Billy, do you know what it is to lie? Oh, lie? Sure, I know what a lie is, you know. And so it's basically him giving the testimony that puts his dad away. And it ends with Mitchum walking into view, like you know, again, his underwear full of blood, and he's, you know, and he's holding whatever the blunt object was that he beat the mother to death with. You know, Mitchum has no, it's one of those things, why did you do it, Dad? It's like, Mitchum has no, like, I was drunk that night, or, you know, I mean, it's literally, you know, there is no, it's a psychological drama that actually has no real depth to it, because it's just like people do fucked up things, you know. So that's an interesting film.
Very.
And that leads us probably to the one that we all watch, and is like the first, you know, gigantic one, which is The Mechanic. You, I've been talking nonstop, so you guys begin with The Mechanic.
Yeah, because you're bringing up movies we haven't seen.
Mm-hmm. I'm good.
The Mechanic is the one that I remember from childhood. My mom's biggest 70s crush was on Charles Bronson, so I'm with Dan and saying it was really traumatic to that he gets murdered by Jan Michael Vincent. So I'm with you, Dan. I didn't know about this guy.
He really dies, too.
Like, yeah.
Like, he really gets in that death scene, and his final, like, image is like, Charles Bronson, you're supposed to act like that with your eyes open and your face all smushy and like it's terrifying.
Yeah,
it's got that John Wayne setup of, you know, the strong man and the up and comer, the protege. They did it in Wayne's movies to make Wayne look more powerful, but in this case you have the guy, you get the sense that Bronson is on his way out in his profession and this is going to be the next man. And then, you know what, there's some darkness behind that beautiful head of hair. And the only scenes that I really remembered from watching this as a kid were the ones involving women. Jill Ireland, of course, playing the high class call girl who reads a love letter. And that's how she seduces the Charles Bronson character. So you like him right away. And then Jan Michael Vincent goes to his like mentally ill ex-girlfriends and she's going to kill herself. And he's just like watching and being like a cold asshole instead of dialing 911.
Yeah, that scene is unbelievable.
Harrowing.
For a movie that's technically about a hitman that is an action movie, the most disturbing scene.
Yes.
I had kind of forgotten that scene is incredibly powerful. And I thought the woman was really kind of incredible too.
She was.
And I looked her up just to see what, and it's like her real life is terrible too. She's one of the women who you know, who accused Bill Cosby of rape. And she sort of, her career sort of doesn't do much beyond this time period, because that all happened. Her and Cosby happened during that time period, which is, I was like, oh my God, this is, you know, this woman had some bad road.
Yeah.
That scene is really disturbing. I love, and the way he treats her, your innocence amuses me. And like,
and
he leaves the room to get a coffee, and she says to Bronson, I know he feels something. And like,
no, hon. Yeah.
And you're like, geez, I don't know if he does.
Yeah. And that's, you know,
it's still a Jan Michael Vincent character, the guy from Tribes, only the dark side. He's still talking about freedom of the mind and exploring it's still about his own personal exploration, which makes it even more chilling.
Yeah, it's apparently, you know, they were in some version of the script, him and Bronson were lovers. It was some version. There is some version where they were meant to be. But
I noticed the like Charles Bronson tells his childhood trauma story about his father teaching him to swim by just throwing him in the water and watching him drown, and then right after he finishes the story, we go to a long shot and Jan Michael Vincent's ass comes in and takes over the frame.
Wow.
Okay, now he's going to be the daddy, and it's kind of interesting.
Yeah, the also I'll go so far and say I think the mechanic, this is not Jan Michael Vincent, I think the mechanic is Bronson's best film.
Good. Yeah,
it's I mean, you could say Once Upon a Time there. Yes, obviously, but I don't, I'd never classify Once Upon a Time as a Charles Bronson film.
Yeah,
this is the Bronson movie all the way, and it's the best Charles Bronson movie. And Michael Winner, who can be a really strange director, I think it's incredibly well directed. You know, so it's if you guys are listening to this and you don't know anything about Jan Michael Vincent, this would not be a bad place to start.
Yeah, and it's so tight. Like, I was like, hi, because I remembered so much of it. And I'm like, well, how are they going to get this in? And like, how are they going to get the European chase in? And chicken licking is licking chicken. And like, I don't remember. Although there's a very convenient tractor during the car chase. Like,
yeah. He was in better movies, but this is definitely the best of the Bronson style.
Yeah.
But I mean, that ending.
Yeah, the ending is one of the greatest endings of all time.
But, and of course, like, you know, the him, you know, I mean, we're giving away everything.
Yeah, give it away.
But like,
the idea that there's a spoiler for a movie from 1972, like, you know, give me a fucking break.
The fact that Bronson kills Jan Michael Vincent from the dead.
Yeah.
And that car blowing up was the more orgasmic than the shark blowing up in Jaws for me. It was like when I was
pretty boys going down. Yes.
Yeah. Like, oh, yes. I love movies where they're showing the assistant gaffer's name in the opening credits and like, whoa, wait a minute. Why are they showing everybody in these opening credits? That means it's going to have one of those closing credits where it's just bam, it's over. And so when that car blows up, it's over. It's over. It goes to black.
I agree with that. I'd forgot that. I think there's like a cast list. There's like bam, pops up.
Just a cast list.
Yes.
But there's zero. There's almost no time process.
There's no crawl.
Yeah.
It's just get the fuck out of the theater. You've been you said your mind.
I remember seeing that in this, like, you know, the audiences being like, I saw that in 72 and just like, you know, when that thing ended, you were just like, you were the whole audience was shattered.
And then you sell another ticket because they got to watch it again, which is
exactly
what you want.
Bring your friends.
Yes.
The next one for me, I don't know about you guys. We're just doing these chronological, I guess. I forget who watched this was, World's Greatest Athlete. Did you guys watch
World's Greatest? I did watch it, and I agree with you on who the scene stealers were in that movie. It was not, I mean, Jan Michael Vincent's hair kind of stole focus, but no, it's definitely John Amos and Tim Conway for me. Oh my gosh. So funny.
I mean, to tell you everyone what it is, it's basically John Amos is a down on his luck coach at a college, and he goes on a vacation to Africa, and he finds Tarzan. He finds Jan Michael Vincent as Tarzan living in the jungle, and this guy can race better. He can outrace tigers and things like this. So he tricks him into enrolling in college in the United States. And so Tarzan goes to like UCLA, basically, whatever school this is. It's a Disney quote unquote family film, or one of their live action things from the 70s. And, you know, like I pretty much, obviously, I've been saying I saw this movie first run. And those, like, you know, all those other movies I saw were like sort of adult movies. I was able to go to adult movies when I was 10 and 11 years old. This was actually more the movie that my friends could go to. And everyone was talking about Jan Michael Vincent because he's Tarzan. So Dan's him not wearing a shirt. In this movie, he's also just wearing a loincloth for half of it. And, you know, so he was absolutely, this is the peak of like, he is the hunk. He is the hunk that is adorable. And what surprised me rewatching it, because it never even occurred to me to rewatch it, even though even at the time, I remember of those live action Disney movies, I remember this one being particularly fun and funny. And I think it was a big hit for them. So I had affection for it. But rewatching it this time, I was amazed at what a joke machine it was.
I love that he gets tutored by Jane, literally. Yes. So Tarzan gets tutored by a woman named Jane. Yes.
Yeah. And she's great too, Dale.
Oh, she is so good. Yeah.
I mean, there's so many just like, it's almost like variety show sketch jokes, but they're, you know, it's like the slow motion shot of Jane and Tarzan in the open field of flowers, and they're running towards each other. They're running towards each other in slow motion with romantic music playing. And then Jan Michael Vincent runs past her, and he runs and he hugs his tiger that's like over in the corner of hers. And there's a lot, and you got Tim Conway, when Tim Conway shrinks and ends up in the woman's purse.
I only saw this movie when I was a kid, and I don't remember these things.
Yeah.
It's one of my most beloved product books was do you remember Photo? I don't know.
Oh, wow.
Photo novels. Yeah. Where they put the whole movie in a little book with pictures. And it's just like, it's just basically a book of stills from the movie, but you get the whole movie. And like, it was the closest thing to a video cassette I had back then. Like,
yeah.
I got
the whole movie in my hand and I can relive it.
It's for people who couldn't read enough to do a novelization. So it was
like, why can't they make them for R-rated movies? I was, because half my life was trying. Like, I didn't have Larry's childhood with a father that brought him R-rated movies. Mm-hmm. I got caught sneaking into Manhattan. Like, my R-rated movies were kept from me, so I had to imagine what an R-rated movie was. And usually, my imagination of what was in the movie was 10 times worse than what was actually in the movie.
Mm.
And I'm going off topic, but there was a Western called The Last Hard Men with Charlton Heston. They said, the South Bend Tribune, our local newspaper, said, this movie should be X-rated for violence. So I just had, oh my God, I bet she has a scene where naked cowboys get their penises shot off. And like, oh.
Yes, you're still waiting for that too. That's like, you know.
Yeah. Dan's gonna write that down right now, and yeah, that'll be in the next script he writes. Yeah.
This is my pitch, Paramount.
Technically, Dan, I guess if we're going in chronological order, you and I did watch another made-for-TV movie with him, Sandcastles.
Which I have history with.
Okay, you talk about that, because I really don't have
to talk
about Sandcastles.
Yes, Sandcastles, which is just Jan Michael Vincent at his hunkiest. And I mean, it's a shitty YouTube out there, but I remember, and Larry didn't believe me. It was great. Like, I remember when it was on NBC and it was shot on video, and there was something about a sexy movie that took place on a beach and had like locations and cars that was shot like a soap opera, only you could tell wasn't a soap opera, that unnerved me because it was very sexual and I was way too young to be watching it.
Okay.
And it started my Jan Michael Vincent like unnerving me quality, because the way Bonnie Bedelia acts around Jan Michael Vincent, because she's set up as this violinist, she's set up as an intelligent, bright woman, and then she just goes to pieces. Jan Michael Vincent turns out to be a ghost who died in a car accident.
Yeah.
So
spoiler alert. Yeah.
Yes, it is. It's definitely an odd little spooky little film, and it's got under my skin. But yeah. Larry didn't believe he thought I was imagining the video part. Then we looked it up, and
because we were looking at such a shitty YouTube transfer, and I couldn't imagine a made-for-TV movie at that time period being shot on video. But when Dan looked it up, and I was like, oh my God, you're totally correct. Because I know, like, sometimes when you get that video look, like when people try to do things in HD or something like that, or that frame rate thing, or that motion thing on some shitty
TV. Yeah, the blurring.
But yeah, that's like you know, it almost is unnerving like that. But it's funny that we gave away the spoiler that he's a ghost, because his character is in the first part of the movie and then he dies, and I'm like, oh my God, I guess he's only a supporting character. And Dan was sitting there saying, do you want me to tell you what happens? He was so like, you know, he just wanted to never did. Like, all right, fine, he's a ghost. Jesus Christ. The weird thing about this movie, though, just as a caveat, I don't know how hard it would recommend anyone to watch this movie, because secretly top billed is Herschel Bernardi, this crazy, like, you know, early 70s kind of character. He played, I think he played Tevye and Fiddler on the Roof and some productions, but he's a, like a Greek restaurateur or something. And then Jan Michael Vincent works for him and he takes people in. So there's this subplot, which is basically the, I guess, almost like the main plot about his restaurant that's going under. But no one gives a shit about that at all. It's
no, even on this podcast, no one gives a shit.
Yeah. Keep on waiting for Bonnie Bedelia to go back down,
like,
to the beach.
I was like, don't bring up Herschel Bernardi. Don't bring up Herschel Bernardi.
Yeah. So,
which I say a lot in conversation.
Oh my gosh. You know, we didn't even, are we at the movies that you watched yesterday at the dentist yet, or are they coming?
No, they're coming. We are, we're at Buster and Billy, 1970.
Ooh, Larry, you have to take it away on this.
I don't know if this chronological thing was right, but let's get into it.
Buster and Billy, this is a movie that, you know, it's about a popular kid in high school. It's sort of a weird combination of like a 50, like a, you know, like a clearly in 1974, but kind of like one of the nostalgia movies that were made at that time period, whether it was Summer 42 or American Graffiti. It feels like that, but it's also has a revenge element to it. And you know, Jan Michael Vincent is like the most popular kid in this rural high school. And he's got a good heart and all. And he's going out with Pamela Sue Martin, who is an actress that I actually really love and have a big deal of fondness for. And his best friend is what's his name? The guy who plays Freddy Krueger. But now he's like this nerdy guy.
Robert Englund.
And and all the boys at night, except for Jan Michael Vincent, because he's going out with the high school sweetheart, run off to with this poor white trash girl named Billy, and she lets them have sex with her. Basically, they just go out into the woods and fuck her, and it's very disturbing. And
no mention is talked about how disturbing it is. Like, I can't imagine this movie being made today. Period. But if it was made today, there would be a lot of time unpacking the situation and how horrible it is, and let's stop the movie. This is not good, but they just make it part. That was just a natural thing that happened in those.
Although they do make it terrible. I mean, they do make it like, you know, until you see the pain on this woman. The movie is definitely in Billy's corner in a big way.
And
you see how she is just like, she's got an absolutely horrible life, and this is the only way she gets any attention on is being the school slut, basically. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, Billy winds up like, you know.
Well, because Pamela Sue Martin is a good girl.
Won't sleep with him.
That's right. That's the reason.
What is this horror of the forest you speak of?
The virgin horror complex. Yeah. Yes.
And instead of going with the gang, because all the Billy scenes until that point had been like gangbangs, Buster goes off by himself, and he doesn't know any better. So he actually almost kind of like takes her on a date, and he connects with her and falls in love with her. And it's basically about the whole town freaking out that the high school, the
popular boy,
is trying to go with the slut, and the town won't accept it almost. But I think it's a great love story, because you really feel this bond between Buster and Billy. I think the movie at one point had a different title, like Black Creek Billy or something, and they wound up calling it Buster and Billy because it is a love story. And the woman who plays Billy is just incredible. It's an actress named Joan Goodfellow, who didn't do much else, but it's a fantastic performance, and you really feel for her. And this movie, being 1974, has one of the most shattering ending. The last 10 minutes of this movie are just, they tear you to pieces. What did you think, Jen? What was your takeaway on this movie?
I had never seen it, and I was expecting it was going to go a dark place. It kind of was giving me like Last Picture Show, Outsiders vibes, but definitely really gritty. I wanted more from the point of view of the female characters, but we weren't going to get it. There wasn't like they connected, and they kind of connected a lot non-verbally, just in looks and, you know, you can be quiet with someone and then you know you have a bond. But also, I was kind of looking for a little bit more talking. We didn't really get to know her very well, but the chemistry between the actors was really good. His performance is amazing. The two women are very good. I thought the end was like kind of rushed, devastating. I can't imagine seeing this back then. Like, oh my God, that would have been a really tough one, staying with you, kind of like that scene in The Mechanic stayed with me from childhood. So, yeah, I was really glad to see this one. I think this is probably his best performance that I saw, for sure.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah, and I have it like in every format. I've got it in VHS. Yes. I've got 260mm print. I have the Blu-ray that's out there.
The Blu-ray is immaculate.
Yes, I mean, it is. And this is one of the weird things. The Blu-ray was actually put out by, I believe, just a fan of the movie who just got sick and tired of waiting for someone to release this film and basically formed a company and was like, I'm putting out Buster and Billy. And which is so cool that, you know, someone just put that on their shoulders.
That's wonderful.
And we can't yes. pass Buster Billy without talking about Jan Michael Vincent's penis.
Yes.
And I think
we have just, full frontal nudity, guys. He was like the Harvey Keitel of the 70s, is what
it's
we're
just
saying.
A wonderful moment. I mean, it's not a sex scene. It's just like everything I love about Jan Michael Vincent, not his penis particularly, but just his naturalness and his innocence is so. Like in that scene where it's not a sex scene. It's just them playing around naked. And I wish there was more talking too, but that scene is worth a lot of words. And
oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. They're just skinny dipping, having fun. Just being,
I love that. I love that. He goes kind of behind a tree to undress.
Yeah.
And you're like, all right, this is a regular movie. And then he totally takes all his clothes off and then just walks out from behind a tree. And then talk about seeing that in the theater. I saw this like 4 or 5 times when it first came out. Seeing that in the theater, that whole audience just erupted because it is just Jan Michael Vincent, totally full frontal, just like walking around. And it's an amazing moment.
And, you know, it's so natural. And again, the ending when he turns dark and rightfully turns dark.
Yeah,
that felt
he
natural
goes Bronson.
Too. That felt natural too, and it's just like he can, like I say, he can go from moral decency to immoral, and like you feel it. It's real.
Yeah, you totally do. And I'll do one little quick shout out. I also love the theme song by actors Hoyt Axton. It's a beautiful Billy's theme. It's a beautiful, beautiful song.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I think that brings us to White Line Fever, right?
Isn't okay, which, I mean, set in Arizona, I had never seen this movie. I love that it's like 6 movies in one. He comes back from Vietnam to his wife, who's breezy. It's Kay Lenz.
That's Kay Lenz.
You know, he gets the bucket truck, names it something with blue in the title, and but he won't run contraband. And then it becomes like, you know, a 70s exploitation thing, and it's like 6 different films. She has a kid or gets pregnant, and then we see her at like Planned Parenthood, so then she has a plot line. There's a lot going on in this movie. Yeah.
They don't make movies like this anymore.
No.
Just like people talking about their paying their bills and
truckersploitation, but realism. Yeah.
Well, we had the, I don't know if they're as popular now. I'm sure they still do them, but it's hard. I want to take you back, Jen, to the time where where HBO first came out. And it was like, it was such a crazy thing. And only families richer than I could have HBO with these HBO free weekends.
They were the best, weren't they? I would record everything.
48, and I watched movies for 48 hours because they were free and they were one after the other. It was the most magical concept ever. But that's where I first discovered White Line Fever. It was
okay.
HBO weekend. It was just like fit right in.
For me, it's always been a little bit of a disappointing film, even though I think Jonathan Kaplan, you know, just gives it his all.
For sure.
In that, like, because I'm coming off of like Going Home and Tribes and Buster and Billy, That Jan was my guy, and this was sort of the first, like, I'm wearing a trucker's hat. I'm doing, you know, he embraced sort
He's
of
doing a bit. Yeah.
The sort of the redneck character a little bit, that sort of like takes him in a different direction, and you
He
know.
escalates so quickly too. He's pulling out a rifle like right away.
I know. Yeah.
Isn't there a middle part that we're supposed to be dealing with? But I mean, don't
Yeah.
you have
They
Slim
throw
Pickens?
everything at the wall in this movie and just hopes a bunch of it sticks, but
I mean, that's
anytime R.G. Armstrong and Don Porter, who played Crocker Jarman in The Candidate, which we talked about. Like, you know,
That came
when
out of my head so much, where like I was like, Cracker Jarman, it brings us three back together, because they're like saying, we talked about The Candidate, and the idea that
it's
like
like, but I love these, love the corporate villains that basically I can't explain the ending, but the ending seems to be Jan Michael Vincent's great vengeance is he runs a truck through their logo, the corporation's logo.
Yeah. And then we're starting a union, basically, or we're going on strike.
But then, like, the rest of the movie's aftermath. Like, well, you did it.
Yeah.
You destroyed their logo. Like, like the Death Star. Like, what?
But there's, it's kind of interesting you say that, because it's like it's kind of a redneck pro-union movie, which is
Yeah.
like, once again, only in the 70s would you get that. It's actually, you know, it's a left-wing trucker exploitation movie.
I mean, everybody wins. Yeah, exactly.
Crazy.
Yeah. You, and like I said, in the scene where we see her at like a Planned Parenthood, there's posters in the background, like, you know, love is a whatever, however many word, letter word, and it's for family planning and all these things going on in the background. So you have a woman being deciding her right to choose. She's having trouble putting together her resume. She's gonna lie about Pima College, which everybody here would laugh about anyway. And then, you know, basically you got unions. So a lot going on. I think truckers would
Anti-corporation.
love this movie, of course. Yeah.
I love her in this movie. She's great from the beginning. She's like,
Yeah.
she doesn't care about him making money. It's like, you're not going to drive that truck all day, are you? Like, I want you to get home with me. Like, you know,
Yeah.
she's got that lust, that Jan Michael Vincent lust I get so jealous of.
Yeah. Well, she'd just been breezy. It was like, now I get Jan Michael Vincent. Yeah.
Correct.
Yeah, no, one of the great traumas of my life is when I found out, like, I was William Holden's age and breezy, and like, wait, he looks like he's 93.
That
man lived a life, though. Yeah.
My version of that, and I think it was when I went dancing too, is when I found out I was older than Jack Lemmon in Save the Tiger. That was like kind of like, oh, I'm that old.
Yes, no, they always see these movies where an old bald guy is like, God damn it, 40. I'm finally 40. Like, what? Wait, what?
Yeah, that's too funny.
John Randolph.
Well, next up is either Baby Blue Marine or Bite the Bullet. I don't know if you got anyone has anything that, I mean, we
I
watched.
watched Bite the Bullet. It was, I agree with you, not enough bite. Candace Bergen, gorgeous. Gene Hackman is great. I mean, he's somebody like we see Jan Michael Vincent, like, he thinks cow punching involves cow punching, essentially. And Gene Hackman is like, you don't mess with animals, and takes him on and like kicks the shit out of him. He fights for women. Gene Hackman has it going on in this movie, I will say. And it's a really good cast. You got Coburn, got a million people in this thing.
Well,
Not a good picture, though.
that's funny, because I mean, before I came around and rejoiced about Billy, me and Larry was like, we would watch these movies with Jan Mike Vincent, like, why aren't we doing Gene Hackman? Why aren't we doing Chris Christopherson? Even like in
Now, I love
Baby
Gene
Blue Marine,
Hackman. We
Richard
should do
Gere
that.
shows up in one scene, like, and he
Ooh.
basically blows Jan Mike Vincent off the screen. Like, why aren't we doing Richard Gere?
Yeah.
But you know, Jan Mike Vincent is definitely own thing. I saw Bite the Bullet, Radio City Music Hall, New York City, when I was a young boy, and well, probably a teenager, and it was I remember the experience being amazing. Don't remember the movie so well.
I
Gotcha.
remember seeing it too, and just it was a, you know, it was like a big movie at the time, but it felt just a little, I remember being underwhelmed by it, and
Yeah.
never actually revisiting it, because I remember it being like, looked like money. It's got scope and stars and things like that, but it sort of just
Yeah.
never really became alive for me. And maybe I
No,
should.
it's not looking for Mr. Goodbar.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, and it's then, really long, and it just, you're like, whoa, we're still on this journey. Okay, yeah.
And then Dan and I, we watched Baby Blue Marine together, which was vaguely interesting. It wasn't, I think it was neither one of our favorites. It's also kind of hard to get. I think I got one of those, like, I got a DVD of it, but you can't really stream it anywhere. It's Jan Michael Vincent gets thrown out of the army, but for some reason, how does he end up with the suit, Dan? Do you remember how he gets the suit?
Well, if you get thrown out of the army, you have to wear this horrible baby blue pajama type thing. And he meets Richard Gere, who's like a war hero, but just completely shell-shocked and at a bar. And then Richard Gere, like, gets him drunk and beats him up and takes the baby blue outfit and puts him in the war hero outfit. And it gets him in trouble.
Yeah, he ends up going to the small town
actually, it doesn't get him in trouble because there's a happy ending for no reason.
Yeah, no, and everyone thinks he's a war hero and
like Hail the Conquering Hero kind of.
Yeah, and then Glennis O'Connor is like a local waitress, and she falls in love with him, and and once again, she clearly loves him. It's a sweet love story. And it seems to be building to something, and but when he tells her the truth, it's kind of just completely thrown away. And then there's a Japanese internment subplot.
And she's like, "Oh, you."
Yeah. so that's nothing really adds up. And finally, Jan Michael Vincent rescues people during this Japanese internment escape thing that happens, and kind of die or gets arrested or die. I forget what this whole thing is.
He gets accidentally shot by the bats.
Yeah. So clearly there, and then it just cuts to like this ending where he shows up back in town, like healed, and him and Glennis O'Connor are like reunited, but it's so tacked on and so just not clearly the ending the movie was going for. I mean, I think my guess would be that he died in that scene, the climax of the movie, and that's how they resolved the problem of him being a war hero. It probably ended with him getting a war hero's funeral or something. And no one knew
that's the truth. It's a great ending.
Yes. But clearly it didn't test well. So the second this happy ending came on, I just turned to Dan and said, reshoot. This is a reshoot that, like, they're trying to save this picture. And it actually made the movie worse. And actually, I wound up looking at, whether it was Ebert or Siskel, one of their reviews, I think it was Ebert. And Ebert basically spent the entire review talking about the last 5 minutes, saying like that it completely ruined anything the movie that had going for it, because directed by John Hancock and coming off of Bang the Drum Slowly, and has this, you know, clearly they put a lot of money in this movie. It's supposed to be Jan Michael Vincent's, you know, it's a classy film, but it just doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't really quite, you know, all come together.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and Vigilante Force next, I think.
Vigilante Force. I mean, I love George Armitage's movies later, like Miami Blues and, of course, Gross Point Blank. But, you know, this is an experience. Kris Kristofferson being a villain, he's kind of the guy that you would always see in movies, and at least from this era, and be like, yeah, he's the sexy one that everyone thinks is great. And then in this film, you're like, whoa, be careful what you wish for. Don't unleash him on your town. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
although it's interesting that he's not. Go ahead.
No, my memory of the movie is so much clearer from a screenwriter structure point of view. Like I go, oh, this movie, I remember this movie being amazing.
Yeah.
Like Christofferson comes and cleans up the town, then he becomes the fascist.
Yes.
Leads, and everything's a little sloppier and clumsier and lazier than I remember. Like, okay. Like I was holding like a boxing match where I'm holding up the other fighter. Like, wait a minute, I remember. But it did remind me of the Michael Ritchie movie Prime Cut.
Yes.
Which had this great Americana stuff.
Uh-huh.
But you can tell it's being subverted by a smartass.
Yeah.
Like it takes place during the Bicentennial, which was an evocative time for if you're growing up in the Midwest in 1976.
Mm-hmm. Also, I can't decide whether to give this movie credit or not for this, but it's like it's interesting that when Kristofferson is introduced, he certainly not introduced as the bad guy, and he's top.
No.
So it really, you know, he is this kind of like he's the brother of Jan Michael Vincent. Jan Michael Vincent is actually just kind of the straight man in this movie.
Yes, for sure.
And it's more Christopherson's picture. But Jan Michael Vincent brings his brother into town because these horrible people are sort of like, you know, turning it into
the oil company workers have ruined the town.
Yeah.
Again, we have some left wing stuff happening at the beginning, yeah. And then it goes in a different direction.
Yeah,
it's a little timely and weird to watch it today with
everything
going on politically. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. But so you think Christopherson is going to be the guy who cleans up the town and also be kind of the cool guy.
Yeah.
You know? And then it's actually when it starts drifting into Christopherson not being the cool guy, when he's actually just being meet the new boss, same as the old boss. It's a movie. Once again, it probably was a good thing that the director did, which was like, you know, you're not sure what you're supposed to be rooting for exactly.
Yes.
You know, because
I remember being much clearer, like, yeah, we're rooting for Christopherson, Chris cleaning up the town. And oh no, he's now turned into a power hungry fascist. Like, I remember being much clearer, but everything's a little amorphous now. It's just like, he's kind of a little bit of an asshole from the beginning. And it's just like, it's a little weird. I just remember I had this script whipped into shape. I don't know what happened.
Yeah.
Well, you're a better screenwriter, you know.
But it did have not as much as Charles Bronson dying in The Mechanic, but I always remembered Chris Christopherson and Victoria Principal, who plays Jan Michael Vincent's girlfriend. They drive Victoria Principal out to the middle of nowhere with Chris Christopherson. Chris Christopherson goes, I'm going to kill you. I don't want to talk.
Yes. Oh my God.
And Victoria Principal starts to run away and he just shoots her in the back. And it's just like, I remember clutching my pillow watching the CBS late movie, seeing this, and it's traumatized me. And
that's probably the best scene.
Still effective.
Yeah.
No, I mean, yeah, that's just that simple myth.
Because today you'd have Jan Michael Vincent show up and save her at the last minute. Nope. Welcome to the 70s.
Take off his clothes and put on suspenders. It's time to go.
time for those damn suspenders.
Yeah. I'm Christopherson is so topless through this whole piece. He just doesn't like shirts. Neither one of these guys likes shirts.
In the most serious like scenes where he's talking to Jessica, he'll have a shirt on, but it'll be completely unbuttoned.
And is that way?
I'm going to dress up for this meeting.
Yeah, he's that way in Star is Born. He's that way in Pat Garrett. He just doesn't like shirts. But going back to that scene one more time, it's just so. I mean, that's the scene where you really makes it loud and clear that Christopherson is unredeemable.
Yep.
This is why the simple matter thing. He's got nothing against Victoria Principal. He really likes.
No.
She was going to be a sister-in-law. You know, it was like, all right,
yeah. But
I have to kill you. I just have to kill you. And it's like, why bother even talking about it? There's nothing you can say. You know.
Mm-hmm.
The other actress I want to give a shout out in this movie is Bernadette Peters, who is actually kind of incredible in it.
She's very good.
Mm-hmm. She plays like the local showgirl. I mean, really like a Western when they go to the bar and she's like,
it becomes a whole different movie for a little bit.
She's like, it's like the process.
Like they said, we got to give a part to Bernadette Peters. Like,
So she's quote unquote the bad singer at the bar. And
got her own movie.
Yeah.
And she's got a speech something that's actually quite good.
Yeah. So
I was not expecting that from this film. Next, I think we have three or four movies where it's getting sort of like this weird kind of anybody. I mean, there's Damnation Alley, Big Wednesday, and Hooper. Does anyone want to talk about any of those?
I saw Damnation Alley at the mall next to my. I lived next to a mall. I could hear people being paged at Montgomery Ward from my parking lot. And there was a movie theater, the greatest experience. I saw Jaws there for the first time, realized I wanted to become a screenwriter. Saw Damnation Alley there. Don't remember a thing about it except Dominic Sand has one scene with a bare back. And I was craving it. And I'm a huge George Peppard fan. I'll be back for the George Peppard podcast, but I remember nothing about the movie.
I just remember really not liking it. It was
I remember being excited for it and like, And you don't know me as well, Jen, but I never use the word boring. I never say I'm bored by a movie. I was bored by Demolition Man. Damnation Alley. Not Demolition Man, which I wrote.
Freudian slip.
It's a terrific film, but I'm doing the commentary, and please buy the Blu-ray.
Yes, Demolition Man is on the commentary. Say yes.
Yeah. Yay, Demolition Man. Boo, Damnation Alley.
Yeah. Do that instead of Damnation Alley. I enjoyed the hell out of Hooper. I mentioned Jan Michael Vincent, Don Winslow replied like Hooper. And so it made me think I needed to watch that essentially. And, you know, my dad loved Burt Reynolds, Smoking the Bandit. He was a car guy. So this is definitely like while I was watching it, I was taking screenshots and sending it to him. And then he rented it right away because he didn't remember. And he loved the movie, The Fall Guy. And so I would say if you're listening to this and you just saw The Fall Guy and you enjoyed it, you love stunts and movies about movie making that are kind of tongue in cheek, this is your film for sure. It's more of a Burt Reynolds picture. Yes. And Sally Field and Brian Keith is wonderful. Jan Michael Vincent is in the film kind of as a
he's the nice version of we play the mechanic.
Yeah. And yes. Also the last 20 minutes are very
really like Jan a nice Michael buddy. Vincent hit.
Yeah. Once again, it's really strange. It's Jan Michael Vincent as the young dude paired up with the old guy, and he's representing the next generation. In fact, the movie is about Burt Reynolds passing the baton to Jan Michael Vincent.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen this since probably opening weekend back in the day, and I found it incredibly enjoyable. I don't really dig a lot of in my mind. I think I dig the Burt Reynolds persona, and I would think that I would like some of those movies. And whenever I revisit them, I kind of don't. This one was the one where that laugh and that charm, and it was exactly the kind of movie you want to see when you think about a Burt Reynolds movie. And so I kind of actually would recommend it.
You know which one I love with him is Starting Over. Did you guys see that one?
It was great. Starting Over. And The End is great. If you've ever seen The End, I love The End. It's funny.
Really? I remember one joke, but I don't remember it. Hooper was number 8 on my 10 best list, and only showing teenagers shouldn't make 10 best lists. I remember Larry saw this 10 best list, and he was much more advanced than I was, and seeing all his R-rated movies. And he's just like, Hooper, really? But he's come around. Like, says, there's a movie that came out this year called Days of Heaven. I want to check that out.
Yeah. That's so funny. Have you seen Deer Hunter? Yeah. Exactly.
But can I just say, you learn a lot about the difference between 70s movies and now movies by comparing Hooper to The Fall Guy. The Fall Guy I thought was brass and soulless, and Hooper made it look like the best years of our lives.
Hooper had there was a pathos there. I mean, like right from the beginning, the amount of pain. Yeah.
There's people in it.
Yeah.
Real people.
Who might die. Yep.
Yeah. It's almost like, I'm not going to compare it to the movie I compare it to. Maybe it's like North Dallas 40, which it doesn't quite go there. But the idea that shows you how much fucking, pain it is to actually be a football player and beat the hell out of yourself every Sunday. And Hooper is like, these guys, they're doing stunts and it's for movies, but they're risking their lives every time. And because it's, it's back in the day, you're actually seeing real stunts.
Like the one with the dog. Like that, so. Oh my God.
Yeah.
And we should say Larry yesterday watched this at his dentist's office under laughing gas.
Yes. Well, no, it's funny. The I've got this strange dentist that has it's almost like a futuristic dentist. The whole office kind of looks like a Stanley Kubrick set, but one of them, the room I was in had a TV on the ceiling. And they give you headphones and they put nitrous oxide in your nose. I had a very long procedure. So I ended up watching Hooper, and I watched a movie we're going to talk about later on called Hard Country. So
got new teeth.
I crowns fell out. Crowns fell out, and then they had to redo. So as part of the movie, I'm sitting there giggling on laughing gas, but also having like painful drilling going on at the same time, and trying to watch Hooper. It was a very surreal experience. And we skipped over Big Wednesday, which is strange because I almost feel like people. Talk about Jan Michael Vincent.
I mean, if you see that there's a podcast about Jan Michael Vincent, you're going to think it's going to be Big Wednesday all day.
You haven't met us. But I love surf movies, Big Wednesdays. I mean, wonderful. It's John Milius, so there's a lot going on. Yeah, there's a lot we could have delved into. That would have been its own podcast.
Although I think you're talking to two people who don't have any affection for Big Wednesday.
I mean, I keep trying to help. I mean, it's got such a great reputation. I just think it's kind of an anemic epic. And I've learned to love Jan Michael Vincent, but I don't know if he's got the weight of an epic in him. It's got a great last shot, the three surfers.
Yeah.
Back and walking into the surf. But, you know, it's weird because people have always loved it more than me and Larry. And I think a lot of people, not the endless summer or anything like that.
No.
No. Although they have him at some point, watch a 16mm print of him in the summer kind of thing. And he's now the old guy in it, in an old surf documentary. Jan Michael Vincent is good. It's Jan Michael Vincent, William Catt, and Gary Busey as the king surfers. But it just doesn't quite gel for me. And I know Milius loves surfing and it was all a tribute and all this other stuff, but I don't know if Milius can do real people. I think he can do
this kind of
doesn't work for me. And I try every couple years, and I even tried watching it the other day. I was just fast forwarding through it. I wasn't trying to cheat for the thing, but and there is some good stuff. There's a period where Jan Michael Vincent goes to Seed. And he actually causes a car accident on the freeway and stuff. And so, but during that thing, I actually wound up thinking about Jan Michael Vincent's future, where he sort of was almost.
Yeah.
Jan Michael Vincent
foreshadows his future.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know we don't get into the real life of it all, but I looked at some of those interviews of him talking.
Oh, they were hard. Yeah. He's honest
about his alcoholism. Why are you an alcoholic? Because I love it.
I know. It was sad. Yeah. I started watching a couple of clips hoping he was going to talk about, and they just went south really fast.
Yeah. No, he had a bad end. And once again, I mean, oh my God, we're really knocking through everything.
But it's like somebody were going to wait. So Jan Michael Vincent, it's like a Marlon Brando podcast where you don't talk about The Godfather and talk about The Missouri Breaks for a half hour, but
welcome to this episode. Yes,
exactly. We're watching with Jen. We watch whatever Jen wants to watch.
I am open to whatever you guys want to talk about.
You watched Defiance though, didn't you, Dan?
I watched Defiance.
Almost watched that. What did you guys think?
It's not.
I've never seen it.
I'll watch Damnation Alley again before I watch Defiance.
Okay.
Yeah. No. Well, what is it even about? It's like a revenge picture, right? Or it's like
a vigilante picture, but it's a little. It's one of Danny Aiello's early roles, and he's enjoyable. But it's a little. I thought it was going to be much more violent and grindhouse, and it's just kind of like a little tame for me.
Okay. Yeah.
And the last one of this in the chronological thing that I wound up seeing was a movie called Hard Country. Which I'd never even given two thoughts to before. But whilst I was clicking around Letterboxd and the Jan Michael Vincent canon, I saw that it was directed by a guy named David Green. And David Green directed one of my favorite movies, a movie called I Start Counting with Jenny Allgutter back in 1970. And I just think it's such a terrific, naturalistic, wonderful film. And I was like, what the heck is Hard Country? And then I looked at it and it stars Jan Michael Vincent and Kim Basinger in one of her very first parts. I decided to give it a shot. And I actually thought it was interesting and good. I don't know, it has a little bit of a pace and nothing happening quality to it. And clearly it had been made somebody somewhere, it might have made at the same time, but it has this urban cowboy thing going for it. I mean, they clearly, I don't know, this movie might have been made at the same time as Urban Cowboy. So I don't know, I can't claim it's a ripoff of Urban Cowboy, but it kind of feels like a ripoff of Urban Cowboy because it's basically Jan Michael Vincent and Kim Basinger are married, but every night they go and party at the local country and western club. And it's like, you know, it's got all the, you know, it's basically that is his Saturday Night Fever. You know, it's like he goes out, he's got a shitty job on the assembly line. And, you know, this is where he blows off steam at the local country bar. And he's like the king of the country bar. And Tanya Tucker sings and a bunch of other people sing. And it's got this soundtrack. But what's amazing about the movie is how much it just is given over to Kim Basinger, who was not a star at the time. It is her story, not Jan Michael Binta's story. And it's really about this this country woman who's kind of deciding this is not the life for her.
Oh, wow.
And she runs the movie, but it keeps on trying to pretend like Jan Michael Benson is the star. And Jan Michael Benson is a guy he can't pay the rent. He can't play, you know, his life's kind of going. And he's got this kind of rich brother that he always borrows from, played by the great Michael Parks. And Michael Parks is great in this movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so and he's always borrowing money from Michael Parks, and Michael Parks wants him to be part of the, like, you know, sell RVs for me, you know, and he doesn't want to do it. And Kim Basinger just wants to get out of Texas. She just, like, you know, she's really wants, and you know, she winds up like applying to like to be an airline stewardess so she can get out of town. And so another big casting surprise is when Kim Basinger's mother is this like Christian lady, but her little sister is played by very young Daryl Hannah.
Oh, wow.
Terrific. Wow.
You're making me want to watch this, Larry.
Yeah, no, it's like, I want people to watch this one because it's like, literally, I've never heard one person champion this movie or even mention this movie, and mm-hmm. I'm not gonna say it's great, I'm not gonna say it works, and it definitely has an ending that belongs with Baby Blue Marine and I would almost say One from the Heart, where you're like, oh, you know, I'm sort of giving it away just by mentioning that is that Kim Basinger makes a stand and she's leaving Jan Michael Vincent, and she's getting on the plane to California, and Jan Michael Vincent does everything he can to like sort of like beg her to come back. Although it's interesting, he in order to win her back, he admits that they should do everything she says. Like, I love you so much. Yes, I will go to
California. That always turns out so well.
Yeah, I'm not staying here with you. I'm not doing it. And she actually loves him too, but he gets her to come down the runway by saying, like, get in my truck. We're going to drive to California. We belong together, but I am going to do everything you want to do. But if a movie had real balls, it would have let her get on that plane and Jan Michael Vincent would just be back there drinking his beer. So that, I think, was one. The movie just doesn't really.
Oh, he'll be there next week. You know it.
Yeah, exactly. You kind of feel that way, and it's it's for a movie that, like, I'm sure the marketing was trying to make it Urban Cowboy. This is too much of a bummer.
Okay.
Cowboy, you know, it's actually the depressing life they lead. You know, even at the bar doesn't have the wild scenes of Saturday Night Fever, Urban Cowboy, and I actually think those movies are pretty depressing too, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
This one is kind of depressing.
And where did you see that on YouTube?
Where did I see it? I think it's on Amazon Prime.
Okay. Oh, really? Okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, talk about podcast episodes that may never happen. I'm a huge fan of early Kim Basinger.
She's wonderful. Yeah.
She did a TV movie, Katie, Portrait of a Centerfold, that I thought was an extraordinary performance. And so, like, when she got older, I thought she lost a little something. She became a little waxworky for me, but
that's right. You say that because her face is different in this movie. She definitely, like, you can tell that she did some improvements after that, you know, towards the middle of the 80s, I guess. I mean, she's still absolutely gorgeous. She's Kim Basinger for crying out loud, basically.
Yeah.
And that's sort of almost the end of Jan Michael Vincent's movie.
The hurrah years. Yeah.
Yeah. Where he moves over the.
So I want to talk a half hour about Airwolf.
Exactly. Well, first, he does Winds of War.
Making $200,000 an episode.
He was
back in the 80s.
He's the highest paid person in television.
Being 90 with Robert Mitchum.
Yeah. And so, like, Winds of War was a gigantic success, and he gets offered this TV show, Airwolf, and with him and Ernest Borgnine. And I've never seen Airwolf.
I haven't either.
The gimmick of Airwolf.
I saw the pilot. He likes to drive helicopters.
Yeah. Who's the bad guy in the pilot? Someone interesting.
Oh, David Hemmings.
David Hemmings is the bad guy. But it was one of those things, like, I think that right around that time is when I go up to college and I sort of like lose any interest in watching regular TV in the 80s. So, you know, I missed the whole Airwolf years. He got so rich off of Airwolf. And I think that's where this, like, the alcoholism and the cocaine use and the car accidents. And so every time I would check in on Jan Michael Vincent, he was looking worse and worse and worse and worse. Like, I don't think there's any real movies to see after that period.
And he wanted to
lots
get back
of direct to disc or direct video.
Yeah, I mean, he's got stuff on his IMDb page, but I'm not going to explore
something with Tracy Lords, stuff yeah. with guns. You know, yeah, yeah
I'm really, sure. really yeah. depressing. And then he just became this alcoholic. Yeah. EMZ kind of person who ended up like having some kind of problem and wound up losing one of his legs even.
Yeah, lots of car accidents, domestic violence, drugs, yeah. and alcoholism. It's sad. You know, what's interesting is if you read about his early life, like he was in the California Army National Guard. His dad was in the military. But if you go back further, like grandpa, uncles, they were bank robbers. So he had this kind of like Wild West stuff in his roots, which is interesting. So lends itself to those 70s movies, those wild ones.
And what's so weird is when you see the YouTube clips of him, all messed up.
Yeah.
Is that it's like such a cautionary tale because he's still got the long hair.
Yep.
And still see Jan Michael Vincent's skull in there, but there's just such a dark alcoholism quality to him. Mm-hmm. It's really one of the worst transformations I've ever seen.
Very sad.
Yeah.
And in an interview, he's like, I want to do more movies. And just like, well, how are you doing with your alcoholism? Just like, I hang on by my fingernails every day. Like, shh.
Yeah,
I know. It's so
some
sad.
Of the interviews I looked at are really depressing because the people just kind of want him to tell, like, talk about, you had a car accident.
Yeah.
They keep on, like, it's like he thought he was going to come
ex.
Talk about his. I'm a movie star, and it's like, and they want him to talk about it. And so he's either got to actually relive it, or sometimes he says, like, I don't remember that. And so neither answer is something you want to watch. I tried to watch some of that stuff just to sort of be able to talk about
it. Yeah. I gave up after a couple of videos. It was too hard. But I liked
that's
going
not what
back
watching
and watching
with Jen is about.
Yeah.
What?
That's not what watching with
James. Yeah, we're not going to go into the hard stuff. I'm not the TMZ. Yeah, those are the other podcasts. But I was glad to do this because this isn't a topic that people really go into. Definitely.
That people are going to watch.
Yeah, that people
we'll
are going to
we'll
listen
see what numbers
to,
we get on Jen.
You know, those big Wednesday fans are going to be showing up in droves.
I'm going to get a bunch of hate mail. I'll forward it to you guys. No, I'm just kidding. People were really excited for this topic. I think, it's one that's overlooked. So anytime you guys have ideas,
He's so authentic. There really is. Yeah. There is no one really quite like him. I mean, I was comparing him to Glenn Powell. Like,
oh yeah,
who I actually really like.
I do too.
Glenn Powell's got such, he's such a winner, and he's got such, I'm so charming calculation behind all his performances. Like he knows how good he is. He knows
what
he's probably a better actor, but he doesn't have that Jan Michael Vincent like authenticity.
Yeah, Jan Michael Vincent just feels like he is.
He's got that sense.
That's what I always say. Like, there's movies that are about, and there's movies that are, and like movies like this really is just an artifact. It just is what it is. It's not about anything.
Suddenly, this takes a turn into like Sartre, basically. We're getting really philosophical here, Dan.
It's interesting. This whole watch really made me. I mean, it was sort of like. Yeah, I had to giggle that this was the topic that we picked. So glad we did because rewatching things, it actually like he's my respect for him like is much, much, much higher than I was even thinking of. You know, I mean, he actually watching them all as a canon. It's like he left a mark in cinema.
And again, I always come back to there were so many different kinds of movies back then.
So much. Sometimes 20 in the same picture. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, now we get A24 neon horror movies, which are fine. big budget action movie, and then an Oscar bait movie.
Yep.
Like, where's my white light?
Biopics. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if he was working today, it'd be him and him and Liam Neeson in some movie together where he would Michael Vincent would be like the young guy who's taking over for Jan Michael Vincent.
He's Jerry Butler's dad or something. Yeah.
And I think we are we in agreement that if you're going to watch one, I think Buster and Billy is streaming
for
someplace.
Sure.
Watch Buster and Billy.
Yeah, watch Buster and Billy.
And buy the Blu-ray and get that penis the way it's meant to be seen.
Yes, exactly.
That's going to be the quote on the next box, yeah. Dan.
Exactly. If you haven't seen The Mechanic either, like,
yes,
even though we gave every element away,
it's still.
It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I know the ending of The Mechanic when I watch it. It's just incredible.
Although I'm always shocked by that beginning is 15 minutes.
Yes.
Yep. And
staking out a kid.
It's the best Hitman movie. I mean, by far. If you're, you know.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Hitman, I want to thank you.
Hitman
guys.
Movies. That was a good topic.
Yes.
Hitman yeah. Movie. There you go.
There you go.
Are you like thinking of the next idea? Yes, I like yes. this.
Do you know how many movies are about hitmen who have a brain disease, like either Alzheimer's?
Oh my
or,
gosh! I know my friend Jed just made that. Like a. Yeah. He was trying to think what to call it, like "Where is my mind?" or like what you know. Yeah, I did something, but what? Yeah.
Who do I gotta kill?
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you guys. This was a real pleasure. You're always welcome back anytime. Anytime you have any weird dreams, you go to the dentist, any ideas, just hit me up.
All right. All right. Also, talk about you're coming to Los Angeles. You're doing some screening. What is this for your screening?
White Palace on August 27th at the Las Feliz 3 American Cinematheque. It's at 10 p.m. Yes.
Okay, cool.
No.
10 p.m. screens are a little tough for us old men, but I'll be there.
Okay. You'll be there. You know what? That's great. So will my mom. She said yes before she knew the movie. And so, you know, that'll be interesting. But yes.
Why White Palace? Why now?
Yeah.
You know, it's a rare film. They found a 35mm print. I'm excited.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Great.
But why did you pick it? What's your
Basically, I wanted to do a film. I wanted to introduce one with someone because I was a little shy of doing it. So I chose Kate Hagen, who's my friend. She's the senior VP at The Blacklist. And episodes we've done together were like on Allison Anders, Griffin Dunn, Amy Robinson, and Griffin and Amy produced White Palace. So we submitted a list of 10 films. That's the one they chose. And I'm stoked.
Great. Sure. Great, great, great. Well, good luck with that.
And you're introducing a film that night in New York, Ed Wood.
Ed Wood in New York at Film Forum, the 27th. And once again, I don't know when this airs. And I'm doing a movie on August 20th at the Los Feliz called Claudine, the movie that that Diane Carroll got nominated for Best Actress for in 1974. And that I'm bringing the co-star, Lawrence Hilton Jacobs, is going to be there with me to talk about the making of that film. So that's a great film. And if you're not in Los Angeles, you can get it on the Criterion collection. It's a super cool movie. So.
Yeah. If this airs after you discover this episode later, just look these movies up for sure.
Great.
I also want to thank everyone for listening, especially my patrons who support the show and help fund my research equipment, film rentals, RSS fees, and more for as little as $1 per month at the Film Intuition Patreon, which is the home base for the show. Other ways you can support the podcast are by sharing, reviewing, and subscribing to Watch with Jen wherever you get your podcasts, and also checking out the cool merch store hosted and created by our talented logo designer, Kate Gabrielle. You can find the merchandise store, including shirts, tote bags, stickers, and more by visiting filmintuition.com and clicking on the shop link. The show's theme music is Solo Acoustic Guitar by Jason Shaw and is available in the Free Music Archive. You can also reach me or interact with Watch with Jen anytime on Twitter, either at Film Intuition or our Watch with Jen account as well. Well, until next time, please take care and happy movie watching. This is Jen Johans at filmintuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen.